Dr. Sean Hanley is an expert on democracy and parties in the Czech Republic and is the author of The New Right and the New Europe, Czech Transformation and Right-Wing Politics. When we sat down at his office at the School of Slavonic and East European Studies at University College London, the conversation covered the demise of the Czech right since his book's 2007 publication, the prospects facing Prime Minister-designate Andrej Babiš and the imminent presidential elections. But I first asked the political scientist what had led him to his specialisation.
Like many people, I did initially did a Russian degree in the mid-late 1980s. It was the kind of perestroika, Gorbachev period, and it was a slightly fashionable thing to do. I did that at Leeds University, which also had a Czech option, and then I also ended up, partly through being at Leeds University, I ended up marrying a Czech and living in the Czech Republic. And I guess what's always interested me about Czech politics is that certainly in the 1990s, it seemed to be very closely following British models. Certainly as far as right-wing politics was concerned, it seemed to be developing a very good approximation to a kind of West European-style party system with conservatives and Christian Democrats and social Democrats. Yet at the same time, these models didn't quite fit the kind of society that I was learning about and living in. And I guess really that's always been the hook that's interested me in Czech politics.
In 2007, you wrote the book, The New Right in the New Europe, Czech Transformation and Right-Wing Politics. You suggest that Václav Klaus in the Czech Republic was kind of an exception in post-communist Eastern Europe. In what way was he an exception?
Well, I mean, in many Central East European countries, the right, the centre-right as it emerged, was quite conservative and nationalist and sceptical of the market, and really stressing that, say in Poland or in Hungary, that there were very distinct national conservative traditions. Now, Václav Klaus was, or said he was, a kind of Thatcherite and a neoliberal, and that he was following a model of what was called standard politics. Now, although if you drilled down, you found that actually Václav Klaus was perhaps representative of a much older Czech tradition of, let's call it, national liberalism. And although Václav Klaus himself moved over the years to a more socially conservative and overtly nationalistic position, what marked out the Czech right, and still does to some extent, is that it was oriented towards the West and that it's much more concerned with market forces than with the kind of issues which preoccupy the, say, Polish or the Hungarian right, which are to do with religion and social policy and the traditional family. Czech right has always been more focused on the market and on efficiency.
And for you, how has the Czech right developed since 2007 when your book came out?
Well, I mean, the Czech right that I was writing about has very much receded. I mean, so if we take, when I wrote my book, although I have to say I wasn't aware of it, it was really the zenith of the Czech right in 2006, 2007, and subsequently it started to decline. So these days, the Civic Democrats are a relatively minor party. And then if we look to, let's say, Top 09, who represent a more kind of pro-European brand of right-wing pro-market politics, they also only just made it into Parliament. So, I mean, I think the answer to the question really is that that kind of right-wing politics has receded, and in its place we see the kind of technocratic populism of Andrej Babiš.
That's my next question. I wanted to ask you, how do you explain the phenomenon of Andrej Babiš and ANO and their amazing success?
There's a mixture of things. I think everywhere in Europe, including Central Europe, established parties have been under pressure from outsiders, or at least insiders who could repackage themselves as being on the outside. So we saw that in America with Trump, and we can see it in different forms everywhere in Europe. I think at the same time, there was always a mismatch between the sort of left-right politics that Václav Klaus, but also then Miloš Zeman, were presenting. They said, well, you know, politics is about left and right, and one kind of alternates. And the fact that there was a large constituency for a kind of broadly middle-of-the-road social market politics, which will just get things done. And when Andrei Babiš started his movement in 2011, he said, well, this is going to be a kind of civic forum. And everyone snorted and thought, well, that's ridiculous because you're a ex-communist, ex-nomenklatura billionaire. But in some ways, the demand for a sort of broad movement of the centre, which Babiš represents and which Civic Forum represented, never really went away. And I guess the last reason is that people are just very frustrated with the performance of the established parties, and in particular corruption has proved to be absolutely toxic for them. Although the Civic Democrats have made a modest revival, the anti-corruption card has been a powerful one for Babiš, but for other populists as well.
And how would you characterise the actual politics of AMO? Is the word populist too simple?
Well, it depends what you mean by populist. I mean, populist is often used as a sort of synonym for being on the radical right. And I think, although there are questions we can ask about Mr. Babiš's democratic values, his populism is, a technocratic populism. It's populist in the sense that he says he's an outsider, that established elites are all really collusive, there isn't much difference between them, they haven't delivered, and he will come in from the outside with his business acumen and sort things out. That's a very typical populist construction of politics, and sometimes it has a kind of radical right nationalist flavour, sometimes, as in, say, southern Europe with Podemos and with Syriza. In Greece, it has a left-wing radical left flavour. And sometimes in Babiš's case, it has I think we can only really call it a centrist and a technocratic set of policies. So if you read the ANO programme or you read Babiš's book, his vision is really one that is technocratic. It's about fixing the state. It's about centralising the state and making it more powerful. And then it's about a sort of very variegated set of policies, from smart motorways to e-government to collecting rainwater to building more sports stadiums. So it's a ragbag of technocratic policies, often focusing on public administration and packaged up in this kind of familiar populist language of taking on established parties.
Before the elections in October, there were many reports in the international media about the Czech Trump, Babiš, they called him. There were suggestions that he was a danger to the European Union. You wrote at the time that that was being overplayed, that portrayal of Babiš.
Yes, I mean the Czech Trump label was wide of the mark. I mean, there are parallels. He's a billionaire. He's a rich man who's gone into politics. He created his own party. He has a populist style, but, you know, that exists elsewhere. We've had Berlusconi. In Austria, there was Frank Stronach. So, you know, rich men do go into politics, and the populist card for them is often a good one to play. I think with Andrei Babiš, I mean, there are reasons to be concerned about the kind of political system he would like to establish. He's written in his book that he would like to strip away a lot of checks and balances, abolish the Senate, abolish the regions, abolish elected councils, and he's very clearly someone who has no patience for the kind of give and take and negotiation, which are really... they're really what make democratic politics work, although they're not very attractive to look at. On the other hand, he isn't an illiberal nationalist, although he taps into that language. And at the moment, very far away from being able to make the kind of constitutional changes or even to pass the kind of laws that governments in Poland and Hungary have been able to pass. So I think it's a question of really watch this space. It's a question really of how Czech institutions will and the Czech electorate will manage Babiš. And I think in keeping him well short of a majority, they may have inadvertently and through all kinds of voting in different directions have made a wise choice.
Well, Babiš is currently attempting to form a minority government with the blessing of President Zeman. How do you foresee the situation playing out now?
It's very difficult. I mean, he clearly needs to have at least three other parties on board to the extent that they will leave the Chamber of Deputies to allow him to win a vote of confidence. I think we're really in a kind of territory similar to that we were in with the first Topolánek government in 2006, where we're going to have a very drawn-out period and where the first attempt to inaugurate a government with a vote of confidence is not going to be successful. So I think we're in for quite a long period of manoeuvring and attempting to get a government through. And there is, of course, the prospect that Miloš Zeman has raised that he might just kind of leave a government without a majority pretty much to govern for 4 years, which on paper the constitution might let him do, and perhaps legally, if that was challenged, it might not. So I think we're in for a very extended process of government formation.
How do you view the possibility that Babiš may agree to a bill on referendums as a sop to Okamura, and what that could possibly lead to?
I think that really all depends on what the bill says, how binding the referendums are, and who can initiate them. It would certainly be for him a possible route to bypass the kind of institutions such as the Senate, which he feels are not necessary anyway. But I think, again, we have to bear in mind that that would need votes. It would need to get through the lower house, which I think it would do. Then it would need to get through the upper house. And there, I think it might falter. So I think we will have to see. I think if I was Babiš, I would offer Okamura relatively little.
What about foreign policy? What do you say to the suggestion that the real kind of litmus test for Czech foreign policy and orientation will be January's presidential elections?
I think they will matter, but I think they will matter for domestic reasons, in particular if we are still, as I think we are likely to be, trying to get a government in place. A new president would change the situation and would change it almost certainly to Babiš's disadvantage. I think in foreign policy terms, it's not really the president's role is more symbolic than real in making Czech foreign policy. So Miloš Zeman and also before him President Klaus have given the Czech Republic a certain international image, but one that's actually been rather removed from its real foreign policy, which has been set by the foreign minister. So I think it would be more a matter of the Czech Republic's international profile than of, you know, than it being a real litmus test. I think it's the foreign ministry that will make policy. And there, I don't see Babiš as having a very radical, distinct foreign policy agenda. I mean, indeed, to a great extent, he doesn't seem to have any foreign policy agenda at all.
I don't know if you're a betting man. Do you think President Zeman will be re-elected in January?
Yes, is the short answer. I think it would be a reasonable bet. There's only one real candidate opposing him who seems to be behind him in the polls, who is an independent, relatively untested. I think the dark horse in the presidential campaign, I guess someone who you might put a few crowns on, could be Miroslav Topolánek, if he can get the signatures together. He's a rather discredited figure in some ways, but I guess rather like Zeman, it's just possible that he could come out of left field and spring a surprise. It's certainly conceivable that Zeman could lose. I mean, if we look at Slovakia, where Robert Fico was seen as a shoo-in for the office of president and only succeeded in uniting all of those voters who disliked him against him in the second round. But I think I would put my money on Zeman, or most of it on Zeman.